on the game-over screen, from his mist-shrouded body, you see Jed's soul fluttering upwards. Up and up it goes, a dancing ball of light, till it's reached the title screen, to bob around the princess where she waits in her glittering cage of ice. Around and around her it dances, and suddenly you think, his soul. You sit up. A soul doesn't weigh anything. It doesn't have a size. On the screen, the princess's eyes twinkle at you. The dimensions are there at every point, too small to be perceived by clunky human bodies. But if you were just a soul, that's when you see them, as if a veil's been pulled away. Suddenly you see the air is full of little doors. All around the room, they're floating there everywhere. And when you scramble up to peep through them, you can see what's on the other side. Each one leads to a different time and place. Through this one, you see you and Ruprecht, in the basement, working on the invisibility gun. And here's the Halloween hop, when the things she said on her doorstep tonight do not exist yet. And you're realizing that Laurie is the exact shape of what's been missing from your arms. Here's tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., the sulky sky, denim blue. Shivering boys with otter-like morning eyes. Siddhartha and Garrett and Anthony Taylor, climbing one by one up the steps of the bus, fighting each other for the back seat, as Coach checks his watch, his clipboard, his watch again, studies the school door, which does not open.
Faster, Skippy.
A voice, the princess's voice, urges you. As the room swims, the particles break apart, the strings unweave like an old school jumper. And here's summer, years ago, before any of this started. And Mum's in the back garden, giving Dogley his first bath. He's still a pup. He doesn't know what water is. Suds are flying everywhere. He yaps and wriggles, nipping at anyone in reach. And Mum goes,
"If you just hold him so I can scrub his..."
When he squeezes out of her arms and shoots up in the air like a bar of soap, then landing on the grass, turns and barks at you, shaking off the water so it flies all over you. And Mum laughs so hard she has to lie down on the grass. Her hair is gold, her tummy round with Nina. The rainbow bubbles bob over the garden like perfect brand new universes. The sound of her laughter is like music. It is music, and it guides you towards the door, against the rushing tide of time, swimming with all your strength, up and up.
What are you doing?
You open your eyes. Ruprecht towers over you with a baffled expression. Must have fallen asleep. You haul your head off the carpet. I was playing the game, you say, gesturing at the monitor, but it's not switched on. You drag yourself onto the bed and sit up.
What's this?
Ruprecht has picked up an empty amber tube from the floor. Nothing, you say. Just getting rid of some stuff. Sleep sizzles into your thoughts like radio static. The little doors have disappeared. Did you get your pod back? Ruprecht looks grimly out the window.
That damn dog.
A growl issues from his stomach.
You don't have any food, do you?
No, you say. Was it all a dream, then? Disappointment burns within you, beads in your eyes, almost too much to bear. Ruprecht checks his watch.
Ed's is still open.
He turns away to count coins from his penny jar. You're looking at...
See you there!
Smiley face. Just trying not to cry. And then you realize you're floating 6 inches off the ground. Holy shit. What's going on? Ruprecht has his back to you. He's saying something about making a new pod. Meanwhile, you are slowly rising up towards the ceiling. You try not to laugh, It's like invisible hands have slipped under your feet and are lifting you higher and higher. Ruprecht turns round. Instantly, you're back on the floor.
What happened to Frisbee Girl?
He says. He can't see them, but quarks and electrons are shooting through the air, sparking from his body like a million miniature multicolored lightning bolts. You shrug. Some other time.
Oh.
Another ferocious rumble issues from his stomach.
I don't seem to have enough change,
he says. I'll pay for both of us, you say. We can have a race.
A race?
Why not? Your atoms are pulling upwards again. Every second you feel yourself lighter and lighter. Say if we started going back in time tonight. Could we keep going back for as long as we wanted? Ruprecht does one of his scoffing laughs.
My dear Skippy, no one's beaten me in 15 consecutive races. And those times I wasn't even hungry.
Well, you zip up your coat. Through the window, the neon donut sign shines in at you. The door of doors. The gateway to everything beyond. Today and yesterday and the day before. All the times and people you have ever loved. Maybe it's my lucky day, you say. Part 3. Ghostland. For where there are Irish, there's memory undying. And when we forget, it is Ireland no more. Rudyard Kipling.
Service. Smile. Efficiency. Reliability. Volunteering product information, instant attention to new customers, courtesy, excellence. Smile. The smile is your personal storefront. It is the first point of contact between the customer and the cafe restaurant, and so should be as carefully maintained as the espresso machine or the counter display. Efficiency. Ed's Donut House is dedicated to offering the customer the two Q's, quality, quickly.
The boy isn't even pretending to listen. He is chewing gum, which is banned on the very first page of the employee manual, and gazing off at the upper reaches of the kitchen walls, which Lindsay notes are discolored by grease. She keeps going anyway, and the more he sighs and shrugs, the slower she gets, just to remind him who's in charge.
These are the absolute basics,
she concludes.
Any level one employee is expected to know them off by heart, before he or she even begins to think about level two. Now, let's proceed to the espresso machine. Why don't you make me a skinny mochaccino?
Off he goes. Slouch, slouch, scowl, scowl. As if she just asked him for a pint of blood. In ordinary circumstances, someone like Zhang would not even have a snowball's chance of making level two. But of course, these aren't ordinary circumstances. We need to tread carefully here, Lindsay, Senan told her. This business has caused enough trouble for us already. An employee claiming trauma is the last thing we want. Have a chat with him. Take his pulse. If he seems disgruntled, maybe a promotion would sweeten him up a bit. Well, Lindsay's not sure how she feels about that. Okay, fair enough. Zhang's been through a traumatic experience. She doesn't deny that. Having someone die on your shift, that's pretty unlucky. At the same time, he hasn't actually put in for a promotion. And, tragedy or not, in her opinion it'd be totally unfair on Ruby and every other level one worker if Zhang got promoted and they didn't. Because, like, when is he not disgruntled? He's always like that. But Senan's regional manager, so what he says goes. Plus, he's hinted there could be a promotion in store for Lindsay too, if they ever manage to get this mess sorted out. And why wouldn't there be? The stuff she's had to do in the last week has been way outside of her job description. Management calling her from London every day for updates. The food safety people sniffing around. Though the worst has got to be the newspapers. They will just not let up, those people. Someone once said, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Well, in the cafe restaurant business, there is. Unless you think people are going to queue up to eat in a place someone's died. So Lindsay's been running around like a blue-arsed fly, barely getting a wink of sleep, doing her best to take the calls and field the questions. And, as Senan said, just make it absolutely clear, as delicately as she can, obviously, given the circumstances, and with all due respect to the family, that the death of the boy in question, while tragic, was not caused by, or resulting from, or in any way related to Annie Ed's Donut House product. In fact, the police said he actually hadn't eaten anything at all in the cafe restaurant, unlike his little porky friend, who'd eaten about 25 donuts. She must have used the words tragedy and unrelated 5 million times this week. Her dad is keeping a scrapbook with all her newspaper and magazine appearances, 10 all told, although 4 spelled her name wrong, and 1 said she was 30. Excuse me? And of course, who gets his own headline except Spa Face, Zhang, heroic efforts? She supposes he was quite heroic doing the Heimlich maneuver and stuff, even though the kid Daniel didn't actually choke. But still, it seems a bit unfair on Ruby and the other staff members. Like, suggesting they're not heroic just because they come in and do their job every day. When in fact, if it wasn't for everyday people like that, the world would just grind to a halt and the economy would be ruined. Also, this is the worst mochaccino she has ever tasted in her entire life. The principal of Seabrook College came in to speak to her too, a couple of days after it happened. He was a tall, dynamic man, in his late 30s maybe. Basically, he was doing the same thing she was, trying to protect the school's image and explain that while it was a tragedy, it was just this one crazy kid and not anyone else's fault. Having said that, he put his hand on her arm. On behalf of the school, I want to apologize for any distress this might have caused you or your employees. He shook his head. I've been teaching for nearly 20 years, he said, and I'm at a loss to understand this. Lindsay doesn't understand it either. He's 14, and he takes an overdose just because his girlfriend dumped him? Jesus, like, relax. That's life. People get dumped. If Lindsay had killed herself over every fucking self-absorbed arsehole who dumped her, she'd... well, she'd be pretty dead at this stage. Anyway, he should have known it would happen sooner or later. That girl was way out of his league. It's obvious from the photographs. No shortage of those, needless to say. Ravishing this, and tragic beauty that, and teen heartbreaker the other. Not to mention gorgeous Juliet in real-life Romeo and Juliet story. Which, hello, A, that would only make sense if her name was Juliet, but it's not, it's Laurie. And, B, if the person had ever seen Romeo and Juliet, they would know that is nothing like what happened in the cafe restaurant. Though at the same time, you can't deny it's romantic, writing her name with his last breath. Like, in a way, that girl is so lucky. Most women won't ever experience anything even close to as romantic as that. She wonders what he was like. Daniel Juster. She imagines the annoying Seabrook boys that crowd in here at lunchtime, and him standing apart, different, sort of quiet and wistful and melancholy. Life is so sad, and love is so unfair. She wonders if Zhang has a girl he's in love with back in China. Maybe he's saving up to go home and marry her. Maybe he misses her, and that's why he's so grouchy. She temporarily feels sorry for him, and she marks him as 12 out of 20 on the product information section, even though he has actually scored a 0.
Zhang, let's talk about the other night. How are you feeling? Are you feeling all right?
He looks back at her blankly.
I mean, after what happened. With that boy?
Hello? Earth to employee? Remember? He took about 500 painkillers? Died just over there by the jukebox? You were holding him at the time.
We're just wondering if you're experiencing any after effects. Trouble sleeping, flashbacks, anything like that. Perhaps you're finding it difficult to fulfill your work duties. Maybe you need some time off.
He draws a rasping breath, pulls his head back.
You work 'em hours?